Hi, and welcome to What a Mess, the only podcast that speaks about fashion industry issues. Today's guest is Stephanie Benedetto, the founder of Queen of Raw. Queen of Raw is a fashion marketplace that focuses on sustainability. Basically, a place to buy and sell your unused textiles and save the planet.
Hey everyone, Hi. My name is Stephanie Benedetto and I'm the Queen of Raw. We are a global marketplace. So anyone from a student, maker, crafter, or quilter to the biggest brands and retailers in the world can buy and sell their unused textiles. Keep them out of landfill and turn what would be pollution into profit. And we've already saved over 1 billion gallons of water doing it. Never doubt that you can change the world.
Amazing. Love that. Love that. Okay, so let's start. And I'm going to go for the questions that we kind of put down before. So I guess you're a little bit familiar with the direction and what I'm going to ask you about. You mentioned in the other interview that your grandfather was a great inspiration to you. Can you elaborate on this a little bit more? And did you feel like you wanted to kind of follow in their footsteps?
So, as you mentioned, I did come from a family background over 100 years in fashion and textiles. I was very fortunate to grow up about a block away from my great grandfather, and he lived to a beautiful age of 105. And nice. So I got to hear the stories of the old school ways of doing business, and it truly was an inspiration for me in how we think about Queen of Raw and leveraging technology to solve some of these world challenges. And, you know, of course, a typical girl, I didn't do the family route initially. I actually ended up on Wall Street as a corporate attorney and wanted to go, you know, help businesses grow, help them go public, help people get hired and you know, raise dollars. And it was a really exciting time when I was there in the market. But then the market crashed in 08 and 09. Mm-hmm. And things obviously on Wall Street and around the world, kind of like what we're going through today, right? Got a bit dark. And talk about seeing the height of waste and greed and excess. And mm-hmm. I kind of took that as my opportunity to get back to my family roots and my inspiration and go build a business to change the world. And I never looked back. Right after I left corporate law, I ended up in a sustainable textile manufacturing company that I co-founded with a friend. She had invented this incredible leather alternative that really hit a note in the market way back then as sustainability and innovation in textiles were just getting talked about. And I was really proud of the work we were doing there. But we were still manufacturing something new. And I'm right. And I would go to all these factories and mills and warehouses and see all this perfectly good stuff, beautiful textiles just sitting in warehouses collecting dust are going to be burned or sent to landfill. And I said, you know, this just doesn't make any sense. This stuff has a need, has a purpose. It's in mint condition. It just needs technology to get it in the hands of designers and makers.
Mm-hmm. Got it. So what kind of made you start your own business? What was the motivation behind that move?
You know, I always kind of grew up in a predominantly female household. My mother, my mm-hmm. sister, my grandmother were great influences on me. And going to an all-women's school for 13 years, we were really encouraged to find our voice and started early on taking public speaking and were really encouraged to think differently and try to go build businesses and really solve world problems and change the world. And so that was always sitting inside me. And I think when the market crashed in 08 and 09, that was when I said, okay, now it's time to get back to what I really want to do and mm-hmm. go build that business and change the world. I think also having children, I have now a 5-year-old and a 1-year-old mm-hmm. and that experience of having children, right? It's not just about you anymore. It's about mm-hmm. my children and my children's children and the future. And I want them to have clean water to drink, clothes that aren't toxic to wear, right? A planet to live on. And I know I can be a key part in making that happen. And that's what inspires me every day.
That's amazing. Yeah, it's a great motivation. Totally. So what kind of made you take the leap into the fashion sustainability? Because fashion is a huge industry, right? But not many people talk about sustainability itself.
You're so right. I mean, fashion is one of the most powerful businesses in the world, right? Industries in the world, connecting very complex supply chains. But in so many ways, it's still doing things the way my great-grandfather did business in 1896, right? Good old pen and paper, or maybe they're a little better in Excel spreadsheet. And this is how massive multi-dollar fashion corporations are operating their supply chains and their business. And so obviously that's a huge challenge, but I believe in that huge opportunity. Because although by some accounts, fashion is the number two most polluting industry in the world of clean water globally, it also means, if you think about it, fashion and textiles and rethinking these supply chains and business models have the power to solve the world's water crisis if we think differently about it. So, you know, obviously fashion is a huge consumer of textiles, and that's where we have focused on to start. I saw this huge opportunity to think differently, but we kind of come at it from a very unique point of view. Sustainability matters so much for people and planet. And it's at the core, right, of why we do what we do and for my children, as we just talked about. But it also has to mean economic sustainability. It has to make sense for businesses' profit. And I think that's where a lot of business models in sustainability are finding it challenging. Because if it doesn't make economic sense, why would a major corporation adopt this? They have investors and stakeholders to answer to, right? They have their customers to answer to, their C-suites. And so that's where we've really taken time to position our business model. This is, of course, about people and planet, but it is also about your business's profit. And by finding this waste in a supply chain, waste is really expensive. Right? It's really inefficient. It takes up valuable warehouse space. It's hurting our bottom lines. Having all this waste looks really bad to the public, so it also hurts our top lines and our end consumer loyalty. So by finding this waste, we allow businesses to sell it and obviously make money. And the good news is they can take all this money and actually turn around and put it back into doing good work in their supply chain. They can pay their workers more, use more innovations and technology to make their supply chains more efficient and digitized. They can use more sustainable textiles and materials. And they can do all that without their overall CapEx expenditure going up. And I think that is so important in how we think about building for the future. It has to make economic sense. And just to throw some numbers in there, one of our largest enterprise customers, they actually saved 15% of their bottom line just by finding and selling this waste. And then by talking about what they're doing with dead stock and sustainability, now that they have the metrics and the data and the numbers from us, they actually saw 3 times the conversion rate in their online direct-to-consumer business. So this drives real economic value while also being good for people.
Amazing, right? Yeah.
Yeah. How do you say no to that?
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to, you know, kind of go back in time and ask, why did you choose the name Queen of Raw? Like, I'm really curious about what's behind that.
I love this question. So Queen of Raw was the first name I ever thought of. And it was available as a .com, which we know is really hard to get, right? And on social media handles. But I talked about it to kind of my co-founder and family and friends, and they all at first hated the name. They thought it was either the raw foods movement or pornography. And the more I thought about it, you know, we tried all these different names. None of them resonated. Because to me, my family always called me the queen, and I want to empower others to feel like the kings and queens of their domain. And also raw for raw materials, right? The word sustainable is such a loaded word, but to me, raw felt so real and at our essence and core, why we do what we do. And so, you know, the name still stuck. And I thought about it. I said, well, the raw foods movement sells, sex sells. I'm going with it. I trusted my gut. And you know what? It's a name people have not forgotten. So it has served us very well ever since. Funny little side note, we went through the Techstars Accelerator and at the beginning of growing our business. And they didn't love the name either. They wanted us to change it. And learning to trust your gut as an entrepreneur, right? I knew it was something that resonated and that would build a strong brand that hopefully people would remember too. And so I gave the next day, I gave the founders of Techstars, the David shirts that said Queen of Raw across the chest. And I said, look, it's a name you're never going to forget and I'm not changing it. And they haven't forgotten it yet. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, they shouldn't, you know.
Yeah.
So Techstars, how did you end up, you know, doing Techstars Accelerator? For those who don't know, it's a global program for startups to kind of, you know, grow and accelerate from. So yeah. Again, curious.
Yeah. You know, when you're early on in the business, and this was in 2018, you have to figure out how are you going to start on day one? What do? Right. You have this idea.
Totally.
We had a website at the time, but not a ton of product to sell in the marketplace yet, but we were starting to learn about our customers. Programs and accelerators and competitions. They're great places to start, right. To get, of course, some pre-seed and seed capital, but also to get a network of community, of partners, of like-minded individuals who can serve on your board of advisors, who can help bring early customers, who can help you build up the business model and the KPIs and metrics that you're tracking. So it was an awesome kind of like a mini business school, right? Condensed in a couple weeks to kickstart your business and get going. So being a part of Techstars, as well as, you know, winning some awesome competitions and awards, they gave us a great kind of jump start to get going. And from there, we just kept growing.
That's amazing. You know, I was mainly asking because I know, you know, such programs, sometimes they really don't believe in sustainability. That's why I was like, okay, that's cool.
No, you're right. So when we position this, right, and now Techstars has become very strong in sustainability and they've really kind of rebranded. And a lot of people have too, right, have woken up to this.
Yeah.
But at the time, we didn't, even though sustainability was a big part of our story, there is this economic business sense of why our business model works, right? Why companies like ThredUp, The RealReal, Poshmark, Depop, all of them work. And we were obviously applying that model to the raw materials side and adding our own software and spin on it. So technology at our core and a strong business model, and they got excited by it early on.
Amazing. That's really good to hear, honestly, you know, that they believed in you like back then. I think that's an amazing sign that, you know, things are changing slowly, but slowly, right? So, you know, we're talking about sustainability. What about the circular fashion, the whole circular economy concept? Like for those, you know, who listen to this podcast, but don't really know much about it, can you explain the concept behind circular fashion or the whole, you know, economy system?
Yeah, I mean, if you think about the way our supply chains and our business models have been for so long, it was very linear, very straight. You take some materials and resources, you make something out of it, and then you throw it away when you're done with it, right?
Yep.
And the idea first, as an industry and in the world, we started introducing recycling. And that's a great, powerful first step. Mm-hmm. But that's only one piece of turning that line into a circle, right?
Yeah.
And thinking about how we can reuse, repair, recycle, all of these re's, right, that keep these materials and resources in the chain of supply and demand for longer. And the more we can keep these materials and resources going around and around and around within supply chains, the more we can derive value out of it and the more economic sense it makes. And so I actually think, as opposed to the word sustainability, circular economy is a much stronger word because the second word in it is economy. It's an economic principle. The longer we keep resources in circulation, in supply and demand, in that circle, the more value we can get out of it and the more it brings down our costs, quite frankly, makes things more efficient.
Yeah, absolutely. So how do you think, you know, about the impact of that circular fashion? How do you see it in the next 10 years? How big of an impact do you see?
I mean, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing if I didn't think this could have the most massive impact on the world. You know, if you think about it, many people may know this statistic, but one t-shirt, right, takes an average 700 gallons of water to produce it and another 700 gallons of water to wash in its lifetime. That's one shirt. Over 2 billion shirts are sold around the world every year. So by small actions that the fashion industry can take, and then doing this at scale by reusing, repairing, recycling, all of those things we're just talking about with these materials and keeping these shirts and the textiles in circulation longer, the numbers are just staggering how powerful this can be. You know, as a startup, my company has already saved over 1 billion gallons of water around the world, and we're just getting started. That's actually enough clean water for 1.43 million people to drink around the world for 3 years. Yeah. So, right, these small actions. So I think where the fashion industry is going, we're truly at a tipping point in the most awesome way of where the world is and where the world can be. And for fashion, these supply chains are truly going to become more on demand, more local, and more sustainable. And we can all be a part of that, right? Even for the end consumer, simple little tidbit, I always say, check the label on the clothes you buy, right? Just like the food we put in our body, the ingredients and the materials that touch our bodies and our children's and family and loved ones' bodies all day long, we should be able to pronounce and read what's on the label. If you can't, you probably don't want it touching your skin, you know, and it's a simple, easy thing that can have a massive impact if we all do the little changes.
Yeah, absolutely. So what do you think that people can do, you know, in their like everyday life to kind of change something step by step? What would you recommend?
Yeah, I mean, reading the label is a great first place to start. A lot of people also say, I don't know, you know, what companies are sustainable or the impact I'm having. Well, the good news is that with technology like ours now, for that exact shirt or jacket, you know, that you're wearing right now, you can scan a QR code and literally see at point of purchase the amount of water, the toxins, the carbon emissions you've saved by that purchase. So that's really awesome to have that right at point of sale. But if you're ever not sure about how a brand is doing and whether it sits with how you feel and believe about sustainability, you can check awesome online resources. One is called Good On You, and it'll tell you in plain English, here's how the brand is doing. And then you can make a decision. Are they good on, do I care about people and or planet? And does this align with my views? And just simple, easy things. The other thing is too, obviously we're going to buy and we're going, you know, unless we're going to go naked, we're all going to consume fashion. Just how we consume it, what we consume, when we consume it, what it's made of, that's what's changing. And simple things like even buying one less shirt, or buying from companies like ThredUp or The RealReal, right? These little acts, when we all take them, add up and do make a big difference.
Love that. So do you think that there is such a thing as a 100% sustainable brand?
I like this question too, right? Because that S word, sustainability, as we've kind of been talking about, it means so many things to so many people.
Yeah.
For my business, we happen to take a very broad view of sustainability. Anything that is already existing in what we call dead stock, right? And is in a warehouse collecting dust for a certain time period, we're going to be burned or landfilled. We rescue it and resell it, even if it's synthetics or leathers and skins. And maybe that doesn't fit with your definition of sustainability. That's totally okay. I can quantify and measure the impact that rescuing that has as opposed to making new. So it matters to us. But you don't have to buy that on our platform, right? You can stick to the more innovative, sustainable fibers on our platform and buy those. But I, you know, inherent in the production process of making something, 99% of the time, right, or a lot of the time, there's going to be some form of waste. But there are cool new innovations and opportunities for what we do with that waste. So, you know, 100% sustainable, it's awesome that these massive companies like Zara and others are saying they're going to get there and putting a stake in the ground. But I do think we have some time to get there, but the future is ours and we can start making differences today. The ultimate goal can be 100%. But even if we just get 1% with some of the world's biggest companies, that can have a massive impact on the world. So I don't want people to get stuck thinking they can only be 100% or zero. Anything towards that 100% to me makes a big difference.
Love that. And is it like difficult to build a marketplace that serves sustainability? Like, I really wonder about that because fashion industry is like super difficult and industry to kind of enter, right? So yeah, just let me know your insight on that.
Well, marketplaces.
Yeah.
In so many ways, the most powerful businesses of the world, right? Alibaba, Amazon, they're marketplaces.
Yeah.
When they take off and the flywheel takes off, they are the most powerful. But you're 100% right. To get them going, to match supply and demand, especially in the fashion industry, it is it is absolutely a challenge. And so, you know, some of how we were able to do that early on is to have some really incredibly strong partners, the United Nations, MIT, Ellen MacArthur Foundation, New York City mm-hmm. government. They've all been incredible collaborators and partners of ours. So as ThredUp, Cartier, LVMH. So that helps obviously build trustworthiness in what you're building and in your community. The other thing is, you don't necessarily, although sustainability is a big part of our branding and our story, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, buying from our marketplace makes economic sense. Mm-hmm. You can get readily available textiles digitally at a discount, located away from areas, right, impacted by disruption at a steep, and at the right price point and quantity that you need with low mm-hmm. minimum. Mm-hmm. So there's that economic advantage too, while also being sustainable. So for a consumer, how do you say no to that, right? And that's mm-hmm. where we've really positioned ourselves. And for anyone who's interested kind of in more of the technology side, in addition to our marketplace, we've built some pretty powerful software and tools, leveraging fun stuff like blockchain and machine learning AI that live behind the marketplace. And that really helps with those network effects when you've got sticky technology that helps support your community even more, you get adoption quicker too.
Mm-hmm. So coming back to the supply and demand that mm-hmm. we mentioned, right? Queen Overall attempts to kind of bridge the two. So which methods do you use to kind of carry this out?
That is key to why we do what we do. So the mm-hmm. first thing we did when we launched the marketplace early on through Techstars, we didn't even have a lot of supply there. We wanted to build the community and the demand, show that people actually wanted this stuff. Because if you build the demand and you've got buyers, and now we have over 350,000 around the world, the supply will come, right? They're going to go where the demand and the money is. Mm-hmm. So we built the community, the network, and the demand, and showed people were searching and wanting this stuff. And then we turned our focus and our attention to the supply. We looked at what people were searching for, where in the world they were searching, what quantity, and we started finding the supply to match that demand. And then to truly automate and scale the demand, we built this software and tools so that now we can quickly and easily, for the world's largest brands, from fast fashion to luxury, find all this waste, and through our automated technology, we can pull it into Queen of Raw's marketplace. Now that we've got all this supply, we can start using intelligence to figure out where does it sit, what is it made of, and who out of our buyers would want it. We could start matching it to that demand. And that is 100%, you're right, key to growing any marketplace. And it's also a lot.
Yeah. So you guys utilize AI, blockchain, automated machine learning, right? To find the root cause of the dead stock waste. So which insights have you discovered so far throughout this discovery? Any shocking discoveries?
You know, when we first started the marketplace, we focused in the United States on inventory in the US and buyers and sellers in the US, and very quickly learned, right, that this supply chains are global, our communities are global, mm-hmm. and this problem is global. There's supply all over the world, but the good news is there's also demand all over the world. And so now our solution is totally global on every continent and growing, and we're building up in certain key regions. What was interesting is when you build a marketplace to sell waste, right, any marketplace, mm-hmm. that's great. But if you think about it, that's kind of just slapping a Band-Aid on the problem, right? You have waste, go sell it in this marketplace. Mm-hmm. Our ultimate goal is how do we get to the root of the problem and figure mm-hmm. out why do we have all this waste and how can we intelligently minimize it going forward? Mm-hmm. And that's where with our software and tools, we've been culling the data and seeing, okay, you know, for every individual seller, where in a tier one to a tier 14 supplier does this waste sit? Why do you have it? Are there any patterns that we can see within those tiers of who and how and why you have this waste, what kind of waste it is, and then who is actually buying it? And so, you know, finding really interesting patterns, but a lot of it is very seller specific. because everyone's supply chain is so unique and has their own intricacies and data and intelligence. But this stuff was all dark data, right? Like we mentioned that, like my great grandfather's day, stuff that lived on pen and paper. Suddenly now a business can see this and understand it and do better going forward. So we will be publishing some really cool new insights coming soon. For right now, those who are interested can check out circularnyc.org. That's where we published a white paper with New York City government, H&M, and a bunch of other big companies. And we showed, you know, by adopting circular solutions and circular marketplaces like ours, what the end result would be, how many good jobs could be created, how much money could be saved and made, and some cool case studies in there. So feel free to check it out.
That's amazing. Thanks for sharing. So since the launch of Queen of Raw, have you seen significant improvements when it comes to, you know, the amount of dead stock that goes to waste every year?
Yeah. So when we started this business, you know, obviously like any startup, we were seeing something early on that not everybody understood. Mm-hmm. And so we would go to a lot of the big brands and retailers. We were in New York City, right, by the Fashion District. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of them, it was a nice to have, but not a have to have. And we talk mostly to the sustainability departments who are great. They're your brand champions. But when you're trying to get, you know, industry-wide adoption and disrupt a way of doing things, especially leveraging technology, right? You need the CEOs who set the corporate agenda. You need the CIOs and the COOs who manage the tech and intelligence and operations. You need, right, design and supply chain and procurement. You need the CFOs who feel this financial pain. Now we're talking to the C-suites, and it's become, I think, according to the latest McKinsey report, a top, you know, a top three priority for every major enterprise corporation. And so a lot of those no's, fortunately, have turned to yeses. The challenge has been through COVID, right? We are currently experiencing a crisis of supply, more unused inventory than ever before because of all those closed stores, canceled orders, right? Missed seasons and collections. So unfortunately or fortunately, the volume has more than doubled of dead stock. We've gone from 120 billion to now over 288 billion in dead stock around the world. But the good news is that the demand has also more than doubled because everyone's supply chains was disrupted through the pandemic. Yeah. But they still need to make products for their consumers to have a business. And so we could, with dead stock, offer big brands and retailers something that was economically advantageous and available, and also gave them a sustainable story to tell. So that's where on the demand side, it's grown as well.
Are you planning to be working with some bigger fashion retailers in the future to have them reduce their dead stock?
Absolutely. So we track, and we can track on a business individual supplier level, month over month and year over year, whether the amount of their dead stock is increasing or decreasing. And this can obviously, with that intelligence, right, help them know how to do better as a business. It also lets us have alerts because people often ask us, you know, this stuff is dead stock and they're not just making it to sell on Queen of Raw. Well, through our technology and leveraging blockchain, we can track and trace this. We know what was made when, pursuant to what order, what sustainability or testing certifications are ascribed to a particular product, right? And how much over time is being increased or decreased. So we can actually create alerts and verify and provide integrity to the data and intelligence. So yes, our ultimate goal is to slow down the volume of waste and the textile production for stuff that isn't being used and isn't needed so that our resources can go into what is needed and where there is a demand. It's also intelligence that we can feed into forecasting tools, right? Now you know what wasn't sold and what does sold. And this is data that can help you as a business do better for your end consumers.
So talking about fashion brands, what are the brands currently that have the biggest amount of dead stock and who are the least sustainable ones?
So, you know, I going back to the very broad position that we take on sustainability, I also don't rate brands against each other because I find that in the sustainability community, when people do that, you're de-incentivizing people to take good acts because they're afraid of how they're doing compared to others or that they're going to misstep. Yeah. What I do want to say is McKinsey put out a report recently on the fashion industry and who dominated in value creation from 2018 through the pandemic. And if you look at that list of the top 20 brands and retailers, Nike leading, right? LVMH, Richemont, Kering, H&M, Czar, Inditex, like those companies who dominated, or surprisingly or not surprisingly, the ones who are looking at sustainability and addressing these issues in some form. Mm-hmm. And of course, we all can do better. But I think it speaks volumes for who is taking action, who is appealing to the end consumers, especially the millennials and Gen Zs for whom this matters, and who is going direct to consumer with these solutions. And so I always want to say, you know, look at these as case studies for any brand or retailer out there. I actually love working with the hot messes. Mm-hmm. I love going after the ones who are doing nothing, because they can have the, we can have the biggest impact with them and make such a difference. But to me, it's not surprising that the ones we're working with and more are partnered with are the ones who are in that list of dominating and value creation, because they're just thinking differently and about the future. And they're going to be the ones who not only survive today, but truly thrive tomorrow.
Got it. Do you think that brands are still kind of reluctant to join the cause, even though it's a serious and like a very serious threat for all of us?
I think brands want to. I think a lot of them just don't know where to go and what to do on data. There's awesome technology out there, right? That promises from farm to finished good to end of life and back around. We can track and trace your whole supply chain. But if you hear that as a major brand or retailer who's still using pen and paper, Excel spreadsheets, you're going to get paralyzed, right? How do you know where do you go and what do you do on day one? And I think that's the challenge. That's why the way we've positioned our solution is, here's where you start on day one. You're sitting on waste that we can find, we can monetize it, and we can help you minimize it. And then from there, let's grow up and down the supply chain and help you continue to do better, right? Like we were talking about, towards that end goal of 100% sustainable and circular. But you have to start somewhere on day one. And so I think that's where we can get rid of this paralysis and help brands and retailers take action with everything going on. And also do things automated and at scale. For so long, for big companies, I think they've seen that sustainability, they can't take action. It's not going to be something that they can do automated and at scale. It's good for little pilot projects, right? Or little eco-conscious collections. But what we've tried to show them through our software is that this can be done for the biggest companies in the world, the most complex supply chains, all automated and at scale, and save you valuable time and resources. And when you position it that way, I think it'll help with the, it helps with the adoption as well.
Yeah, I fully agree with you. I think brands are kind of afraid on how they can change, right? It's not so easy to implement all these big, you know, steps or formulas into their, you know, business practice.
And they're also afraid to, how to speak, right? How to articulate the numbers confidently. And if they're afraid, if they misspeak, that they're going to get in the press, right? Forget about it, this negative backlash and cancel culture. But now with blockchain and other tools and software like ours, you have a record, you have proof. So when you speak about the water and the toxins and the carbon emissions you've saved, you can say it articulately and confidently because you've got it and you can back it up.
Yeah. That makes sense. So it's great that, you know, platforms and marketplaces such as Green Overall are out there to help the brands, right? Yeah, I wanted to ask you, in 2018, you won WeWork Creator Awards and you met Dalai Lama, right? Yes. How was that? Did he give you any valuable advice?
You know, it was, if you ask yourself years ago, right, that you would actually be on a stage and a platform with His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, I can't say it was something I would have expected. It was an incredible experience, very humbling. I'll be totally transparent. I am a humanitarian at heart. Obviously, I said I do what I'm doing for my children and future generations. But I am not necessarily, I'm a New Yorker, I'm a city, I'm not the most spiritual person, but speaking to His Holiness, right, you could really find the heart and the humanitarian reason of why we do what we do. And my big key question to him was, with everything going on in the world right now, there could feel like a lot of overwhelming darkness, right? And stress and anxiety and depression for people around the world. And I asked him, how do you find happiness and joy and laughter? And I think from that kind of a question, right, it's something we can leave us all with. What is the opportunity here to do better? and to find happiness and joy and laughter in who we are and why we do what we do together.
Mm-hmm. And did he give you like any great answer to that one?
You know, he said he spends a lot of time looking at the heart of things and finding mm-hmm. for every negative, right, a positive. And mm-hmm. he spends a lot of time, he actually calls himself a master of laughter, an expert mm-hmm. at laughter. Mm-hmm. So finding ways to laugh, and he's really funny. He tells jokes. He was joking with me on the stage, right? And I think that's something that sometimes we get very caught and wrapped up, both as an entrepreneur, as an individual in this world today, personally, professionally, in the seriousness of it all. But being able to laugh, tell a joke, right? Find the human element. And he did that with even some of his strongest opponents. And even with everything he got through being ostracized, right? And kicked out of his society mm-hmm. and community. And overcoming that adversity and still being able to laugh and find joy, any of us can do that, right?
Yeah, I think it's a great lesson, you know, and a great experience that you got. Yeah. It's amazing. So what is next for you? What is next for Queen of Raw?
Well, you know, we're really excited to be growing our software and tools and our marketplace globally and want to reach, obviously, more people. Everyone across industries and around the world ultimately can benefit from this. So in the future, this isn't just fashion, although that's where we started. And it's incredibly powerful and a great place to start. But textiles touch everyone. Everywhere in the world, every single day, right? It's your clothing, the material in your chair, the inside of your car, the carpet under your feet. And how can we leverage other industries to support mm-hmm. each other in this use of resources and the buying and selling? So that's where we're growing and going and excited and happy to help anyone in any way.
Wow, that's amazing. I cannot wait to see that, you know, like all those different industries kind of
come together.
Yeah. I think there's a huge, you know, power and unity. So yes. Yeah, absolutely. So I always end this podcast with one question, which is, what is your dream or what is your wish, you know, like depending on like how people see that?
You know, for me, obviously, I wish that we can solve the climate crisis. And I think that starting for me with water was a key place to start. And a lot of people ask me, well, what happens when you write yourself out of a marketplace business because you've solved the world's waste problem? And I tell them, well, then I'll have solved the world's water crisis too. I'll have everyone on my software and I'll move on to the next big challenge. But we've got a while to get there. And so let's go build powerful, powerful businesses and solutions that solve for people, for planet, and for profit, because together we can and will change the world.
I love that. And let's, you know, let's keep a lot of hope. You know, this podcast is just purely like educational. It serves educational purpose. So I invite experts and people. And, you know, I try to talk to people about things that matter. Because most of the people don't really understand like what's going on. They see the world is changing and it's like, you know, they see the negative effects, but they don't really know the details, or they just, you know, hear about those scandals or viral posts, you know, about this and this brand that didn't pay up, blah, blah, blah. Right. But they don't really know anything more. So thanks so much for sharing.
I'm glad and happy to help and appreciate it.
Hi guys, this is Dami, your host. Thanks so much for staying and listening to this podcast. If you would like to support us and follow what we do at Mess Magazine, please do follow us on LinkedIn at Mess Mag or on our Instagram at Mess Magazine. Thank you.